But we're, I think the hardest thing I imagine is
Being entertaining.
finding a thing you could talk about. I don't
Yeah.
know. Like people who do like current, like just like culture, like talk about whatever. Like, I don't know how the hell you do that.
Yeah, I'm like, are we supposed to talk about Chinese spy balloons? Are we supposed to talk about are we supposed to talk about sports? Because that'd probably be the most up our alley.
I'm so ready. Welcome to Know Your Rights, a music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton
as each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law,
and we know our rights.
So are we in it? Are we in the
welcome,
episode?
Welcome, 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 everybody.
Yes. To know your rights.
Know your rights. Welcome to right now, right here. That's the other one.
Oh,
right here,
now,
right now.
Right now would have been good. We're stuck with know your rights.
That's pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's been a long couple of weeks. I've had some bizarre moments at work, but you know, I work with the elderly, so they're bizarre.
We don't talk. I feel like we want to save up our juice, so we don't talk much. Like once we're done recording, in fact, once we're done, you pretty much just hang up. You don't even look at me. Like, okay, Rob.
it's easy.
Did
That's
you,
the easiest part of this.
One of the things that happened, and this is probably going to be for listeners well in past what I'm talking about, but one of the things that happened while we were talking was that the Grammys happened. And I have to ask you something, because I didn't watch the Grammys. Did you
That
watch
makes the
them?
two of us.
Why don't we care about the, why don't you care about the Grammys? I could care. I don't, I just,
well,
not
oddly,
even don't care, I just dislike.
Oddly enough, we're going to eventually talk about Vampire Weekend, and I can care less that they won. I think they have two Grammys for Best Alternative Album.
Right, for Contra and Vampires of the Modern City, right?
I think it's Vampires of the Modern City and Father of the Bride.
Oh.
I think Contra was eligible
they're all
nominated. Yeah.
Right. But so what is that though? Because I was thinking about this in terms of like the Oscars, because that's like the only other equivalent I have. And I don't feel like anyone cares about the Grammys. I've never met anyone. I know it exists. There's like a cadre on the internet who gets upset when people don't win things. I've never met an actual human being who A, watches the Grammys, and B, cares at all about their existence.
I mean, I would imagine that it's because it doesn't really consider the entire spectrum. What do they have for the Oscars for your consideration?
Right, it's like advertising and like the local trades and stuff. And
yeah, and I feel like we both share the similar mindset that very popular music is not the best music that's out there.
But it feels crazy.
Nothing
to
against
me.
You, Beyonce. Nothing against you. I mean, you set a record now. You've won the most Grammys, but that doesn't inform my musical senses.
I just, to me, it's always been like a weird blind spot in the way people talk about music. And it's one of the reasons I wanted to do this podcast with you is, and this is going to sound real, I'm going to be really careful how I choose my words, because I know there's a path where I sound really elite-y and jerky. But
that's fitting the artist we're covering today anyway.
Right, that's why I have the sweater on, by the way. This is my, not really, but it's very Vampire Weekend sweater, everybody. But
that's why I got a tank top over a long sleeve shirt that just says NBA. This was a gift. You
feels,
can't see it. Yeah,
it feels very naive to me that when people talk about like Grammy nominated people, that anyone would actually believe those become the best like artists of that year. Like, it seems insane, and like not in a way where I'm like, oh, you guys are stupid. Like, I try to reconcile that version of reality with mine. So it's like the winner, I think, was Harry Styles of like Best Album of the Year.
And Beyonce fans were very upset,
and that's like either of those two. It's a, I don't know, I use the word objective, and that's not the right word to use, but it feels objective to me that no one could believe that they sold a lot of records.
I think that's it. I think it comes down to like album sales get you nominated. It's not so much that, you know, the sound is that impactful. And that's not taking anything away from Vampire Weekend. I think that the two albums that they got a Grammy for are really good albums. Just they seem like they reached a certain echelon to where they get that opportunity. Whereas, I mean, who's like Manchester Orchestra? Did they ever get nominated?
Oh, I mean, I don't think so. I could be very wrong, but just off the top of my head, it doesn't seem possible.
Well, and that's Tool, one of my favorite bands growing up. They have a Grammy for, I think they have two for best rock performance or best metal performance. And at that point, I'm going like, all right, we're just handing out trophies. Like, let's do the participation trophy for the Grammys. Why not?
It's easier if I think of them as these were the most popular, like, artists, like, musical artists of the year. Like, that's like the Billboard Awards, right? That's basically what those are. It's like, hey, of the top 100, like, these are, like the most voted. I don't know how they vote. Clearly, I pay a lot of attention to all these things.
But it's like, I know with with the Oscars, it's this, what is it, the SAG union?
Right. Oh, yeah. You have to get like voted into the Academy. I don't even know how it works in the Grammys. But who votes for those?
Well, I mean, shit. The NBA, their MVP approach is just like, you've won too many. You're no longer eligible. Like, Jokic is going to get it this year. He'll never get another one.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. Because I think that's how they kind of function it. Right? It's like, you won enough. You could have a great season, but it's time to pass the torch. It's time for Ja Morant to get it. It's time for, Embiid is never going to get one.
It's so sad for him.
It is, but he gets injured all the fucking time, man.
Did you see Mac? By the way, I know we're
Mac
way
McClung.
Off. Mac McClung. Oh, my God. Let's just talk about him all podcasts.
The entire time, yeah. No, I did. I actually, like, started following him on Instagram when he was in high school because of, like, some of his dunks. It's just little footage. The same thing happened with Zion. Or Zion, I saw him have a dunk to where it looked like his neck was above the fucking rim.
I love Zion. So I wish he played more.
He's going to get injured. He's not going to be as great as everybody thinks.
I don't need him to be.
He's going to get injured, and he's like Charles Barkley meets Shaq. He's like the perfect
the worst of both of their knee cartilage and the one person.
Yeah, he's going to get injured constantly, but he plays like a big man, and it's cool watching him just bully right at the rim.
I had no awareness really of mixtape culture with basketball,
and one videos and all that.
Right. And like, I would always be like, what are they yelling on the court? Like when they,
we are losing so many Vampire Weekend fans right now who are just like, I fucking hate sports. Talk about this intellectual band already.
Oh my God. But really quick
with the NBA, who's your favorite player in the NBA who's not on your team? You're a Warriors fan.
I'm a Warriors fan. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had this conversation with my wife because we were just talking about this. I think we both have the same. It's Damian. Dame time.
He's my second. And he's amazing. I love Damian Lillard. I hate when the Lakers play him because, like, I got to root against you and you're going to punish us.
Like, when people use the word clutch, like, I feel like it gets thrown around. It's like everyone's favorite player is clutch. It's like, I dislike him for that very reason, because he is the one. He's so cold blooded. He never even looks happy.
When he taps his wrist, it's real. It's real. He's gonna make. I wasn't even kind of surprised when he won the 3-point competition. I don't know if you know that.
Oh yeah, I saw. It was awesome.
And it's just, I was stunned. I'm like, this is his third time, and that's when he finally won. I can't believe it.
Steph and those others.
Steph, Clay, those guys are.
And I love those guys. Clay is my favorite. I love Clay all the time. But like no offense, but when D'Angelo Russell does the ice in his veins thing, I'm like,
he did it one time, man.
He said like three or four times.
Well, that was after. Unacceptable. That was after he was on the Lakers. The one time on the Lakers, that's when it mattered. But so wait, Jimmy,
who's your number one?
Jimmy Butler. I love Jimmy Butler. That dude. And this sounds so old school for NBA judgment. He doesn't complain ever. Any call the refs have, you don't see. I've maybe once or twice, but for the most part, I mean, LeBron's my guy. He's the main guy on the Lakers. He complains on everything.
Yeah, I'm going to be very constant. Careful knowing this is going out into the world. I have ill will towards LeBron James. Let's put it that way.
Fuck you. But Jimmy Butler.
You had no ill will towards LeBron until for.
No, actually, quick side story, and then we'll start talking about music, everybody.
Okay.
I remember Leo, mutual friend of ours. He was in Default American for a stretch there. And Robbie and I were bitching about LeBron. This is when LeBron's on the Heat. And Leo just throws out this hypothetical. Man, you guys would fucking hate it if LeBron was on the Lakers. And I kid you not, Robbie and I look at each other and we do that little like fist at, going like, nah, man, if he's on the Lakers, that's our guy. I got no qualms with having him on the Lakers, but he's not on the Lakers at that point, Tor. Yeah, fuck him.
I feel like one of my least favorite, like all of all sports, like the discourse I have like little patience for is anytime when someone's like, appreciate this player, even if he's not on your team or they're not your team, appreciate them. So it's like, well, I hated Tom Brady, but now that he's retired, I'm going to miss him. No, there's no, if I don't like a player for something they did to my team, I have like deep, I feel like I'm a rather forgiving person otherwise. Yeah. But
yeah,
no, I look at you and I just go, no, we're done.
Yeah, no, Tom Brady is, he's forever tainted.
That's how I feel about LeBron James. He can't retire fast enough. I need him.
That's understandable, I guess.
I need him out of my life.
Well, I need him to get one more ring and then he can retire.
Well, we'll pick this up as we enter into that. We'll turn this podcast into an NBA playoffs podcast, which I'm sure will draw so many more people.
I mean, baseball season starts end of March, so we're getting close.
People, I'm ready to love again. We're going to do it. And this is the season. This is the first season where the Dodgers are like out of the top five power rankings going in. I just saw the ESPN rankings.
They're still predicted to win their division.
I mean, it's like, well, they lost Trey Turner. And then someone complained, well, they lost Corey Bellinger or Cody Bellinger. I was like, you haven't been paying attention.
Yeah.
Because that was not a
great
loss.
Fielder.
I love Cody.
Does nothing.
I am looking at a Corey Seager bobblehead right now.
It is February. I got a calendar and Cody Bellinger is up there. I was like, how do I feel about this? Why is it? It's the dumbest thing. All right. Justin Turner. Let's dive into into some music.
What are you listening to, Rob? What are you listening to this week?
This week I listened to Corner Club.
So what do you know about them? Because I was listening to this before we recorded.
It's, you know, it was a little upsetting listening to the recordings. I think the atmospheric, very laid back vibe is cool. Mm-hmm. But I discovered them on Instagram. Again, it's just somehow the ads keep coming to me and going, check out this artist, check out this artist. Mm-hmm. And I listen to them and it's a duo, but on the recordings, there's a lot more instrumentation going on, believe it or not. It doesn't sound like there's that much instrumentation, but the Instagram videos was just the dude with his acoustic guitar playing it solid. And they were just in a nice room with a nice reverb, and her voice with the acoustic and his playing ability just sounded great.
Her voice is great.
Yeah.
And what I heard the EP Little Love Lullabies, mm-hmm. which is super hard to say.
Yeah, it is a tongue twister, but yeah, Little Love Lullabies is it's something that actually you and I tried to do along, or maybe we didn't try, but it was a goal of ours. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this would ring a bell for you, but Smoke Break
rings no
bells. Yeah, that was something we talked about a long time ago, where we wanted to make an album that you could listen to on a smoke break.
That rings some bells. I hear one bell ringing.
Yeah. Torres, like, what was it? Last week or 2 weeks ago, I recommended Ren to everybody. I hope you checked it out. It's a good song. Hi, Ren. That's 9 minutes long. The EP by
Corner Club.
Corner Club. Thank you. That EP is 11 minutes. It's like six songs.
That's good.
Awesome. That's awesome, man.
Default American has a lot of short. I mean, you guys have changed a little bit, but you used to have a lot of short songs.
I like the abbreviated just because there are times where I think ambition makes you go too far, where it's nice when you just kind of cut it off. Just cut it off. Don't. The song's good. There are certain songs that people have told me, you need to go to that chorus again. It's like, I think that'll make the song worse. The chorus worked one time.
I think I was one of those people. I think there was a few of your guys' tracks where I wanted the groove, but I also respected the discipline. I don't feel like I always have that discipline. I know I don't always have that discipline.
Well, you get Bob Dylan sometimes. And it's like, oh God, another verse. I thought this song was over, but you're lyrically proficient enough to the point that it's okay. I'm still captivated because there's a real message coming across.
I played one of the, I can't remember what song it was. Oh man. Well, it's not recorded anyway, so no one would know what I was talking about. I played a song for you I had written a little bit ago at Robbie Coleman's house, Lostwood 2.0 for anyone.
My bandmate. Yes.
Yes. Yes. And the first thing, it's the only thing you said, you were like, it's long.
But that's my attention. When you're,
I know
you're,
what you meant.
You're lyric. You are lyrics. That is the draw for Colton Saylor. Not that the music is bad, but that is the initial focus point.
Some would say the only focus point.
Some would, but for me, it's hard. It's hard for me to take in every lyric as it goes along.
And I could see when I was listening to this, the Corner Club, I see the philosophy. And actually, I'm excited to talk about Vampire Weekend because the person that I keep thinking of that writes like Ezra Koenig, right? And what is the guy's name? Oh my God. I want to
Batman.
This. Batman.
He's going to hate me for saying that, but dude, Batman is in your name. I can't pronounce his last name.
Rostam. But I think Rostam is the name he goes off of. Mm-hmm. Right. But I was thinking, who writes like them? Because they have such a unique
Paul thing. Simon.
You. Well, Paul Simon. You write, I think, and I heard, we've at different points, right, wanted to write songs like that.
Mm-hmm.
And your approach, I think, has that same discipline. And I hear it in Corner Club.
You got to know when to back off. You just have to. And for me, it's a lot easier because I'm lazy.
Yeah. I could never be that ethereal. Like, they're like real heavy reverb on this EP I was listening to. And I kind of wanted to not, because her voice, I think one of the tracks was one I just listened to. Maybe it was Binary Tree.
Okay.
Where they turn the reverb off and it's much flatter. And I was like, I don't know, do this.
Dreamt Home was the one that really stood out to me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was easier to focus on the lyrics when that one came in. And I haven't listened to them a bunch. I think I've listened to that 3 times now, which is not enough for me to memorize all the different elements. But unfortunately, that's how my mind works.
I liked it. So check out, everybody, Little Love, Lullabies. And by the way, I don't know why I need to bring this up, and you can feel free to cut this out, Rob. But this bothered me because I listened to our very first episode.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of our first listens episode, you just brought up, Mos Def, right? And I was talking about my person, and I was like, all right, so go ahead, check out Mos Def, Jasmine Mira. I was like, maybe more Jasmine Mira than Mos Def. What I meant there, and I didn't get to finish my thought.
I heard that as well.
What I meant to say was Mos Def doesn't need as much attention.
He's more established.
He's more established.
I did get that impression, but it does come across like you're like, so fuck Mos Def, listen to my suggestion.
So listeners, if you're out, if this stays in the podcast, if you listen to that episode 1, and clearly I literally been thinking about this for months since this happened. So listeners, now you can hear that and go, oh, that's what Colton meant. So there we go.
Yes,
clearly, I should not be in a podcast.
So everybody go and check out Black on Both Sides by Mos Def.
Jasmine Mira. Did you ever listen or watch the movie Brown Sugar with Taye Diggs? It's got Mos Def in it. It's very good. It's like a rom-com. It's like all African-American cast. It's set these two kids meet at the birth of hip hop, and their whole love is a metaphor of hip hop. It's pretty good.
Well, that's
Mos Def is the actor and it's really good.
Oh yeah. Well, if you listen to Black on Both Sides, it's basically a love letter to hip hop and African American culture in general. It's awesome.
So let's
listen to Rock and Roll, everybody. Listen to Rock and Roll. That song.
Oh, I thought you
Elvis
were saying
Elvis ain't got no soul. I love you most, Def. That is killer.
That's great. For a second, I was like, "Oh shit, you're saying listen to Rock and Roll, everyone."
No. He has a song called
This is Song.
Yes. And most Def, he's a Renaissance man. He goes across the board. He's multi-talented.
We could just start talking about him again. And just
he's probably
going.
A better guitarist than both of us. I don't know for sure, but I wouldn't be surprised.
So for the record, everyone, listen to Mos Def. Listen to Corner Club. I'm also upset at you because when you first told me about this band, you said another name instead.
We'll get there. What have you listened to this last?
You made me listen to Corner Store by Macklemore. I didn't like it. Okay. So awful. I hate Macklemore. So my pick, everyone, is the Bats, New Zealand band. It's called Expert in a Dying Field.
Yes,
that's the name of the album, but it's also the name of this single. And
really good song.
Isn't that good?
Really good song. I've listened to it once. I listened to it earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
But I love when it said Expert in a Dying Field, or when I read the title, I'm like, okay, what is this going to be about? But the fact that it's kind of loves dying.
Yeah.
That's a really cool metaphor for a relationship.
It was, I agree with you. And it was also, because those are really kind of tricky, right? When like the main metaphor is like the title. Like sometimes I don't like songs that give away the trick too early and like you just know what it is. And you're like,
it's like watching a movie trailer to where you see the best scene already. Yeah.
But the way that she expands on it and just like the music too, everything about it is there's something about like rock bands from Australia and New Zealand that I don't know what it is. It's just I like gravitate towards it.
I'm not outlawing singing anymore. Based off of our last episode, singing is necessary for us to get our points across.
That's like when I whenever I sing Frightened Rabbit and I start talking in a Scottish accent and then I can't unsing that
you mean
Scottish
can't
accent.
You mean you can't unsing.
Can't is so good. No, the album is really good.
I'm sure it is. I'm definitely going to follow it up because that listening to it, I knew I would have to listen to that song a few more times.
I want to say the other one, Knee Deep, I think it was. I don't know, but yeah, very good. Yeah. Check both those out, everyone. The Bats, as well as equally Corner Club. Check both of them out the same.
I thought you were going to say equally opposite.
Equally opposite.
You're getting me confused. Yeah. Listen to everybody that we recommend every single time we do this.
Yes, and make them super famous to where we'd stop liking them.
Okay, so
is it time?
Almost. So almost. The other song I told you to listen to.
Oh my god! Yeah, tell me.
No, you go ahead. What song? Oh. What did you think of that song?
The Beyonce Hold Up.
Mm-hmm. What did it remind you of?
What did it remind? Are you saying did it remind me of Vampire Weekend?
No.
Oh, good, kind of did.
Well, I mean,
it's Hold the Up. Only song I like on Lemonade. I
there you go.
That.
Yeah. Hold Up. They Don't Love You Like I Love You.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a Minute. They Don't Love You Like I Love You.
Oh, Maps?
Maps, right?
It is Maps. Yeah. Oh, my God.
The person who wrote the song or wrote the lyrics for the song totally admitted that he was basically ripping that off. None other than Ezra Koenig. He wrote that song. Well,
I didn't know he wrote Hold Up. Really?
Yeah, he and Diplo.
Oh.
Yeah, that's why I put that out there. I'm like, listen to this song, because Ezra Koenig wrote
it. It's funny because I mean, spoiler alert, everyone, I really love Ezra Koenig's songwriting. Like, I like it a whole bunch. And that's why, like I was about to tell you, that is like the only song on Lemonade I can listen to. Like, I don't.
Does Lemonade have a, what's the song? because I really like the song where it features Jay-Z. Who would have thought? It was a single, Drunken Love. Is Drunken Love on Lemonade?
We're just embarrassing ourselves with lack of Beyonce knowledge.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Beehive. I'm not necessarily a diehard.
I'm a Solange Knowles. Solange Knowles, like, I'm ever the contrarian, but she is awesome.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. Yeah.
Seat at the Table is, like, I don't know. I hate to, it's hard to not be like, oh, I like Solange, but I do. And she's the one that said, hey, Jay-Z is a cheater, so I'm going to.
Say My Name is one of my favorite songs. Go Destiny's Child, as far as I'm concerned. Everybody,
Scrubs.
Go to that. Scrubs.
No, why did I say Scrubs? That's TLC. I sound a million years old. I meant Bills. I wanted to say, because Bills is kind of in the vein of Scrubs.
Actually, the instrumentation and the vocal melodies are pretty advanced for early Destiny's Child stuff.
There's a whole generation of those, like, all black R&B, like, female singing groups that, like, Black, do you remember them? Spelled with a Q?
Yep.
B-L-A-Q-U-E. Mm-hmm. I remember they did a version of Time After Time. They did a cover of it. And, like, I remember just, like, for whatever reason, I still think about that cover. It was good.
I'll definitely check that out. I'll be sure to play that in the background right now. That should be going right this minute.
Singing Time After Time doesn't give any indication.
I'm okay with it.
Oh, man.
All right, but there's the transition, man. He wrote that song, and now we're diving into Vampire Weekend.
Everybody, welcome to Vampire Weekend time. So we'll go through our categories. This was far easier, I think, for both of us, right? Just fewer albums.
Fewer albums. That's the reason why. I did have a difficult time selecting stuff for categories. That's selecting particular songs or particular albums. But it was nice. It was nice because, I mean, the first album is, what, 34 minutes? That's great.
That's true. And really, all of them, I guess they do get longer. Even though Father of the Bride, like, it's an intimidating record when I'm like, oh, I forgot it's like 18 songs. Mm-hmm. But it's about, and everyone knows that I measure my music according to when I cook. It's how long it takes me to fry hash browns in the backyard. It's one hash brown frying session.
Yeah, for me, I mean, listening to an album is dangerous because that's a whole lot of beer and a whole lot of cigarettes. Nobody smoke at home, please. I don't want anybody who thinks I'm that cool to start drinking and smoking. Like, but
Rob McGregor does that.
Well, this is actually something that we never touched upon. How do you listen to music?
It's like changed.
when we go over these bands, because obviously we're going to try to listen to it as much as possible. Mm-hmm. What is your medium?
This is kind of the same as when I was younger, right? Because my peak, like, music loving period is high school, as I think for a lot of people, where it's just music is everything, right?
It's life, yeah.
It's your identity, it's everything, and that was all the time. Like, I'd go to bed listening to albums. Like, I can't remember how many times I listened to, like, Coheed and Keeping Secrets, falling asleep.
Yeah, like, you know what album pops to mind is, what was that first Chevelle album?
Oh my gosh. It's the one with the red, right?
Yeah, yeah. That was one that I would throw on all the time to just, like, I'm going to fall asleep. I know this forwards and backwards.
I'm trying so hard not to sing the red right now. I'm not going to do it.
That's all right if you do.
But nowadays, it's far, like, my listening, because I also like to listen to novels, right? Mm-hmm. Or my other podcasts or YouTube, whatever. I'll work out when I'm cooking in the mornings, right? Mm-hmm. I like to do it while I'm grading. I grade essays. And
oh, that's an interesting.
I'll listen to, just live with it, really, right? It's like the stuff to turn your mind off, to put you in a mood. My vinyl, for example, I'll play it when I'm reading in the living room or something. But it's not as much as I used to.
Yeah, see, and I can't read. So you like to listen to it more to where it's the whole room hears it. Like through speakers, you know, through vinyl. Because, I mean, I have vinyls as well. I'll listen to my record player. But for me to listen to music and really try to dissect it, it's got to be in ear. I recently got JBL headphones from Robbie, actually, for Christmas. Because he knows that that's how I take in anything. I'm podcast, or I don't want anybody else to hear what I'm listening to. I don't know if it's embarrassment or if, but I prefer that approach. So I need it all in ear for it to be personal. And at work, I get to walk around a lot. So it's a really nice, you know, walk around on a beautiful Lancaster day.
I don't know.
I felt like that was something that we should kind of clarify how, when we listen to music, how we listen to music.
Yeah. And I guess it is kind of, for me, it's, I live with it, right? Mm-hmm. It becomes like kind of, and that's like with part of how I think about, for example, these records, because you're right. It was hard. It was much easier because it's just less to listen to. And also I'd listened to some of these records so many, like Vampires of the Modern City. That's tied to such a specific part of my life when I was living in Oakland. And I would be listening to it in headphones walking. I just used to walk through Oakland all the time.
That's my preference. I love just walking and listening to music or listening to podcasts.
So when was the first time that you remember hearing Vampire Weekend?
MTV. I remember they had a stretch there. It maybe lasted about a month, but it was when Vampire Weekend, the album came out, the self-titled came out. Mm-hmm. And they had a little, what was it? Before and after every commercial break, they had little, I'm going to use the term vignette, but I'm pretty sure that's not the proper term.
Yeah, like short little.
Yeah, like little shorts. To kind of. And it was trying to showcase their cleverness. They were a hot band at the time. You know, A-Punk had come out.
Is that the first one you think you heard, or was it Oxford Comma?
I think it was A-Punk, but I think Oxford Comma had the most hype behind it.
What's hard about Vampire Week when I was thinking about it is, like, we've already kind of said several things that hints at their reputation, right? Mm-hmm. They are the preeminent, like, Ivy League.
Yep.
Like, sweaters. Like,
to Columbia.
They have the sweaters tied around the necks, right? And I actually, I don't know, it's funny because I was thinking about it, it's like there's so many things about this band that I should dislike. Like the way that they're set up instantly, I just think it's like so opposed a lot of ways to how I like to think about things.
It's a little elite.
And yet, like, spoiler, I freaking love Vampire Weekend. I think it's hard for me right now. Like, I have songs I want to talk about somewhat critically, but I just think they're fantastic. Like, when I think of, like, American rock bands that I like every record, I'm expecting it to be good, and it is good. It's like them and maybe a few others.
See, and I don't consider them a rock band.
Well, that's, yeah. I can see that.
That's where I get, because, I mean, a lot of their songs, it seems like the musical composition distracts from them playing their instrument, from the four guys. You know, I can't hear that as a live performance. I mean, certain songs, of course, but I mean, something like, what is it? M79?
M79, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of strings going on. You know, there's a lot, there's another element. One of the first times I saw them live, I've never seen them live in person, but watching a video of them live, they had a string quartet, or, you know, they had strings behind them. Mm-hmm. And it just felt a little distracting from what they're doing. It feels like a lot of the time Ezra Koenig is just holding a guitar and singing.
I feel like, to me though, that's part of the thing that I appreciate. Like, and I remember, I think I did see them live. I think I saw them at Coachella, although I don't remember much. I think I,
lots of drugs.
Oh my gosh. Well, they were there, I'm sure. but I really don't remember much about that performance, I guess. But I do know from, like, seeing other things of them perform, but really just listening to the records. We were just talking about bands that kind of frustrate us because they're like, we're only going to do this record. Like, you know, Manchester Orchestra on Cope. Like, we just want to make a heavy record. And what I appreciate is any time that they're approaching writing a song, and I don't know what, like, Ezra Koenig, for example, his, like, primary like instrument is to write on. My guess is guitar, right? For a lot of things, maybe not though. Maybe piano.
I would imagine those are the two main sources that he goes to when he's got an idea in his head.
But I can't see them, their approach, like in like any kind of limiting way. It seems like it's what will best like build to what we're doing. And that seems like even like, you know, Father of the Bride, where so expansive, right? Every track feels a little bit different. I'm always game for that because I just want to hear things that are good.
Sure. Well, he strikes me more as he's responsive because I know that he and Batman, sorry.
Rostam
Batman.
Yeah.
How do you say his last name? How would you say it? Because I mean, I'm going to struggle with it. I'm not incredibly cultured, but it's like Batmanji.
I would say something like that. Yeah. Batmanglish. Perhaps, yeah. But I know that his like official, like what he goes by as a producer is Rostam.
Okay. So I'm going to try my best. I'm going to try my best, Rossman. I'm not trying to be insulting in any way, but I know that those two are I've read interviews where they say that they're basically the co-writers. And I know that Rostam really likes to mess with more like digitalized music creation. So I would imagine that he probably has some sort of, it's almost like a hip-hop producer with a rapper.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, here's what I got, you respond. And I that's the vibe I get from Vampire Weekend. I can't say for certain.
Oh, I think it is. He's more or less, and he wasn't really on that last record because he leaves after the third, right?
Yeah, but he leaves after the third, and they consider the first three, what was the phrase they used? That they would look really nice next to each other on a bookshelf.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they do.
I could see that.
What's the term that I meant to memorize this?
I think he said he called it a buildings Roman.
Thank you.
Yeah. Coming of age story.
Yes.
You and I saw the same interview.
Yeah. Which was a great expression, but it's also a little like, okay, you're being a little hoity for me here.
That's a term. I don't know what to say.
That ain't a regular term. Not everybody says that.
People use coming
of age. You motherfuckers with your PhDs and your nice sweaters.
it is a nice sweater. It's funny, I didn't even think about it. But you know, I want to push back on one thing because I was just saying, we were talking about when we first heard them, that's the look, right? And they went to Columbia. Yeah. But I feel like that vibe, right? And it's also like, well, these like really hoity-toity white dudes, right, went to Ivy League school, and then they're using a bunch of like
Afro-pop, Batman would disagree like, with the white dudes.
Yeah. That's exactly it, right? That was the myth. Mm-hmm. And even like Ezra Koenig, who's like, you know, I'm from like a middle class Jewish family.
Very open.
I barely got to college. I had to get like scholarships. Like all of them aren't from like hyper places of wealth, right? Where you know what? I'm going to make you proud right now. I actually think they're a lot more like the Beatles, right? Versus the Rolling Stones. Because isn't the whole thing, and I'm going to embarrass myself, but isn't the whole thing where the Rolling Stones look really tough? But they're from like a really posh part, right? Of England versus the Beatles.
Yeah, there was that element of the Rolling Stones were the rough and tumble, and the Beatles were much more Backstreet Boys. You know, where it's just
But the Beatles from that rougher part of where are they from?
Liverpool? No, is it Liverpool? For some reason, that sounded like a fake place in my head. I think I watched Gulliver's Travels the other day, and now
Lilliput
is what it sounded like to me. Yes.
This is very literary today, everybody. Yeah. We're on thing. I think in this last listening, it kind of crystallized a few things for me. I think they're way more like not necessarily like blue collar, right? Which I hate the idea that like really great singer songwriters have to always be Bruce Springsteen. Like
it's fascinating when I listen to them, I hear there's no teeth. There's no like edge when I listen to them.
I hear teeth. You don't hear teeth?
No. Who gives a fuck about an Oxford comma is about as edgy as they get.
Oh, man. I don't agree. I think their songs, I mean, it's not one of my chosen songs, but like California Girls or California English, right?
Yeah.
Like when you listen to that track or others, like there are parts where he's like addressing all these different images and myths, right? That like upper crust, like white culture especially has about different parts of the world of things. But what he's also doing is he's like undermining those things, right? And he's making fun of them. And like the music's really playful alongside it. Like
sure.
I, I heard more of that this time. I'll agree with you at when I was younger, right? Listen, when you're in college, it was like a Wes Anderson. Like they had the same space for me as Wes Anderson does.
That's a very good reference. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that. And it's funny that you would think Vampire Weekend would be in Wes Anderson, like in a film.
I can't believe it's not in any of their films.
Yeah. Well, I think they both know that they have similar corners that they can't like.
It's the Ivy League kind of intellectual approach to it.
Yeah.
When I say there's no teeth, I really don't mean that as an insult. I'm actually kind of, I have admiration for the fact that they are so compelling without being so counterculture. You know, their counterculture is addressing the fact that is addressing their image. You know, I think they do a really good job of addressing what people might perceive them as and trying to kind of nip that in the butt quick.
That's interesting. I agree with you. I think I agree with you. I think it'll be
I phrased that poorly.
No, yeah. I don't think you did. I think you phrased it perfectly. I think it's just a complex thing. But I think as we get to our favorites and least favorites, I think it'll become clearer. That's me also getting people to be like, oh, let's listen.
Oh God. So all right, let's get it going.
Let's start, guys. Let's start with, I guess we're just going to go with the same. I don't know if I should switch it up. I'm not. I'm going to go the same. Best song.
Best song.
What do you got?
All right. My best song is Harmony Hall. That is the best song to me. There are honorable mentions for sure. I Stand Corrected is. That's really close to a perfect song to me. But I think I like Harmony Hall because it does have a little more musical flavor to it. There's a lot more going on. I mean, when the pianos kick in right at the pre-chorus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And who was it that told me that the intro reminded them of Zeppelin, which I don't agree with.
I don't think I've listened to enough Zeppelin to know for sure. But that intro guitar lick is awesome, that acoustic line.
And it's a really, it's kind of a basic little pattern played on the guitar. You can hear, I can see his fingers just barely having to contort. Mm-hmm. It's very ergonomically correct of a guitar riff.
And so here's maybe something we agree on, because I feel like when I was listening to the first three records of Vampire Weekend, I was like, Rostam is the secret sauce for Vampire Weekend. Mm-hmm. Because for me, all those other flourishes, right, that are like the digital stuff and that, like when I listen to those three records, I'm like, that's what makes these records like sonically so cool or interesting, at least. And then, but when I listen to Father of the Bride, where he's more, I know he does some work, but not really. I'm like, man, Vampire Weekend, more or less as a three-piece, is really good.
Yeah. Like, I do still think it does feel like they have outside hires that they bring in.
Oh, I mean, it's still produced really. Yeah. And that's it. It's always lush, right?
Yeah.
But, like, there are definitely tracks where you can tell the main interplay, like Harmony Hall, right, is the way these instruments are playing off of each other. And you're right. That piano, when it comes in, doesn't it not sound to you like Fatboy Slim?
I can hear that.
I wonder.
It could be, but the dynamics of that song, and that song's so dancey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it hits that line, ooh, how do you not have a little like? I'm so glad this isn't filmed.
Oh, he was dancing. Everyone, it was really good. You are a good dancer.
Nah, thanks, man. That's good. The shoulders, and even the lyrical dynamic of, you know, I don't want to live like this, but I don't want to die. I even tried looking at like the Genius lyrics where they break down more of it. It's kind of scattered. The song doesn't seem like it's about one thing in particular.
Yeah.
There are moments where it seems like it could be about World War II. It could be about, a Jewish man growing up in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Just hearing that one lyric that I don't want to live like this, but I don't want to die. I'm like, well, I can instantly relate to that.
He definitely grounds it really well. Because you're right. Like, and a lot of those tracks, and I would say with that record, although I think he does that throughout a lot of his, at least the later ones.
Well, isn't that lyric also featured on the previous album?
Maybe. He does that a lot.
Yeah.
He actually, like, the fact that you're saying that he was referencing Maps when he co-wrote that song for Beyonce, that makes perfect sense to me because he's so referential, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of even musically.
Fuck is a Mansfield? What is it? Roof? What is
Mansfield
it?
Roof? Yeah.
I have no idea what that is. I have no idea what that is.
You want me to look it up?
It's him being an elitist asshole.
When someone uses a word you don't know, the first thought shouldn't be, look at this jerk.
Look at this dick. I can't go to a bar with him. I'm not voting for him for president because I want my president to be somebody I can sit down and have a beer with.
That's right. That's like, I remember, oh man, I'm sorry. I don't know why I'm on this, but like when like Gaslight Anthem was like big, and I was like, this guy's like the next big American songwriter. I was like, the middle class deserves a better songwriter than that. Like, just because a dude wears that stupid hat, the little fedora hat.
I went to a Gaslight Anthem show and I watched Murder by Death and we left.
This is a bird. I think now we almost have to do a Gaslight Anthem episode. So
we'll get there, but
not soon.
Yeah, that's the burn right there.
Oh man. Well, okay. I'm going to tell you my favorite track. Yes. And I, by the way, though, that's a very good one. It was close. It for me has to be Hannah Hunt.
Oh, that's a fucking great song.
I love that song. And you know, of course, it's going to sound on par for me. Lyrically, it's to me the best song he's ever written.
Oh, and you know what? The lyrics are fantastic. The lyrics they pop while I'm listening to it, but the music behind it. I love how the amount of measures it's like he cuts a measure off to restart the whole thing again.
Yeah. And the production that goes with it is like, I think there can be some heavy-handedness, right, when they're in the studio and doing things, but there's so much more discipline. And you're right, like everything feels tight. And then you mentioned it in a previous episode, right? That air of the night moment, the boom, 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 boom. When the drums hit in that song.
Oh, yeah. It's a little dancey. Move your shoulders, Colton. Just move your shoulders a little bit with that. Yeah,
This is the only dancing I know how to do, by the way, is shoulder dancing.
You know what? But that song, I've seen you dance, like literally in public, and you do kind of this little, like kind of.
He's moving his arms up and down, everyone, like I'm a
You're to the beat, though. It's just like
I'm rhythmically sound.
Oh, you got rhythm. You got rhythm. But when that part kicks in, I think of you. I see you dancing. But all right, let's move past that. But that's probably his best vocal moment as well. Because at the end of that song, those are some notes.
He's going for it, and you're right. It's way different. Like, I feel like it's weird that it feels like that song. It's almost traditional. It's like way more traditional in terms of its structure and like the big moment. And you're right. Yeah. The big vocal finish. Like, there's so much about it where it almost feels like it was written for someone else when I listened to it, but the images and the way everything plays off of each other. And like, there's so much space in that song. Like, lyrically, we're not hearing anything right about this couple or what's going on. We're hearing like the places they go.
Yeah. They're traveling.
These little scenes.
What was the line? I wish I could remember the lyrics better, but where he says it's like, no, you're not describing it's, I feel like I'm in dangerous territory here of misrepresenting the song, but where it's like, he kind of tells the person, it's like, no, you're not talking about us. You're talking about Hannah and I.
The two favorites I'm thinking of, I think one of them is one you're saying is, whereas a man of faith said hidden eyes could see what I was thinking. I just smiled and told him that was only true of Hannah. And we glided on through Waverly and Lincoln.
Yeah. Oof. Which again, he's being a elitist douchebag. Cause where is Lincoln?
What's Waverly and Lincoln, right? People, bunch of coastal elites.
That will always bother me though. It's not elitist to me at all, but that's something that when people reference landmarks, I always, it feels like it's such a cheap, in a, it's such a cheap good lyric.
Because it's like very, you know, who does that a lot is
Colton Sitt. No,
I do. I think actually, I don't know if I do. I did. Funny enough, I did it in like my record about Lancaster, California, and I was like, no one knows. Like when I wrote a song about the Highway 138.
Yeah, Sierra Highway. What the fuck?
What's Sierra? Well, Sierra Highway. But I think normally I agree with you, and I think the reason, like when people do that stuff, and I think it pays off. Is if it's thematically like a part of it, like there's movement in each part of this, right? It's like a different scene. And of course he mentioned Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara. I thought about, yep. UCSB. I miss that place. I think we talked about it. I wish I could go back there, but I would just be a creepy.
It would be
mid 30s guy.
It's hard to be back in Santa Barbara when you're like, well, IV is right.
But well, you could do it. You're a teacher.
The only other thing I want to say about this song is the thing about other songs I think on that record too, and on Father of the Bride, they're like a New York band, right? That's where they met. They're very much like an East Coast band, but I actually think Ezra Koenig is such a great like writer about California. Like I actually see them more and more as a California band.
He does have a few references, and I was like, all right, where I know that you're Columbia, you know, that you all met in New York, but there are moments where I'm like, you're referencing California a decent amount, but California's a nice place to live when you got the money.
It's well, that's true.
Yeah. But actually Hannah Hunt was in my honorable mentions for underrated songs. I'm looking at my list and that was second to last.
I can tell you the other one I was struggling with is like a lot of the openers, like their openers are so good. Like I was thinking of Orchata. I was thinking of what you call obvious bicycle.
That's a really, and you know what? You listen to fucking Plastic Ono Band, because I'm pretty sure that is motivated by the opener to John Lennon's solo album. It sounds so much like Mother. You can hear the piano parts. So whenever you get a chance, listen to Mother by John Lennon. And then listen to Obvious
Bicycle. Yeah.
Thank you. Obvious Bicycle. There's a similarity. You'll hear that little piano fill. And I think that had to have been an influence. I don't know for sure. I'm not trying to project it on him. It's all...
But that's something, though, it's kind of about... Weirdly, I think Vampire Weekend cultivates it, where I think a lot of other bands would be more like, oh, no, we didn't even think about that. Yeah. But I feel like they have more of a hip-hop mentality in terms of the way that they sample, right?
Yeah, it's intentionally referential. It's not something that is accidental. It doesn't feel that way, at least.
And strategically, it's smart, because then they could do it on accident and just say, no, it was being referential.
Yeah. I've ripped off Colton Saylor many a time, but I just have to admit it right away.
Yeah, or text me, like, right before something goes up.
I hope that that gets established as this podcast goes along, that people get to see the little like the play that we have as songwriters with one another.
It's hard to be friends with songwriters, because I do feel like, well, I covered Country Road song you wrote, because I love that song. It's still one of my
so mad at you.
It's one of my favorite songs to play.
I was so mad at you because you did such a good job with the acoustic. When I wrote it, I was so lazy with it, but you added the little bass fills in between. I mean, not that you were going crazy, but added that perfect...
He's complimenting my guitar playing.
Absolutely. You're easily, you're a better acoustic performer than me.
That's not true.
Easily.
Not true.
Easily.
This is...
Well, we're already doing a bad job of showing our play, because now we're just... complimenting one another.
I love you too much.
Yes. What's our next fucking category?
Well, now we got to be negative. Worst song.
I got some honorable mentions.
Oh my goodness.
Dishonorable mentions.
Well, let me go first so we give you space. All right. Because it's tricky. I don't know. Like, here's the thing. I feel like I can just voice this. It's clear. There's not a song written by Vampire Weekend that I listen to, and I think I can't get through this song. Like, I really like them. Like, it's gonna be hard for me.
I know these
I'm a negative guy.
Yes, I think I'm going to be the more negative guy when it comes to this one.
But there's two that I think that I were like, I could have less of that. And I think probably it's Holiday.
Ah, no, not on my list.
And you know why? It's funny because I feel like for all the things you were just saying, like the no teeth, which I totally get. I think, and I know that politically he has other stuff he's trying to do there. Like he's trying to poke fun at or like critique this idea that your mind is totally blank when you're on vacation, right? You're not thinking about like, you know, conflict overseas and stuff. I still think there's ever been a good song written about going on vacation. I don't think anyone should ever try to do that ever again. I don't think Weezer should do it ever.
Well, yeah, okay.
Because there's two songs that they've written. I'm still critiquing Weezer, guys. But
that's perfectly fine.
Holiday off the Boo album.
That's an alright tune.
Just go on vacation. That's the and an island in the sun. Which now, guys, I'm gonna do a backwards thing when I say most overrated song. It's Island in the Sun is the most overrated song.
I feel confident. I still feel good about our original.
That's right. This is just the theory of vacation songs coming back to me.
I think I've always just loved the music video for Island in the Sun because just like
Mexican wedding version or the animals?
The animals.
Oh yeah,
come on. If you give me a cute anything,
Rob loves animals.
I'm in.
It's one of the cutest things about you. There's a lot of cute things about you. I like it a lot.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, man.
There's a cat right over my shoulder right here. And doesn't he seem at peace?
It's just I don't know. It's just a vapid in my head. I'm already like checked out when there's a song about going on vacation, because when I'm on vacation, I don't need to listen to a song about a vacation. And when I'm not on vacation, I really don't want to hear a song.
I think that's the complicated is you're focusing more on what he's saying in it. Whereas I think sonically it's all solid.
But I think that's the thing is musically there's nothing about it that's pulling special. Me anyway.
I think it's a good choice. I think that would have been a better choice for overrated as opposed to worst song. Because I got four for you.
Lay them down.
Worst songs. Diane Young, Worship You. Give Up the Gun, White Sky. White Sky wins. That is the dumbest chorus. It all comes
I think we're actually at a moment. This is the third episode, perhaps, of this podcast.
We'll see if there's a fourth.
I'm in complete disagreement with everything you just said.
White Sky. Everything besides the chorus is good. The chorus is dumb.
I don't agree with you.
Why did he do it?
I think it's the same vocal display showing I had this range. It's like from the first record to the second, because that's off of Contra, right? White Sky. So when I hear those two, to me, it's got the same thing they're doing on the first record, where like they had those like playful, like Blake's got a new face, right? Those tracks where there's like a vibe, and musically, I felt like they were using vocals, like they weren't always there as vehicles for the lyrics, right? They were like another instrument, a la someone like Andy Hole.
Yeah,
I think when I listen to White Sky, I don't need anything else. Like in that chorus, to me, it makes perfect sense.
They couldn't have like found an instrument to play that part, to play those notes.
They did. It was the vocal chords. So that's what kills it to you. Like when you get there, you cringe.
Well, and you brought up a good like Blake's got a new like that is the worst part of the song to me. Everything else is good, but then all of a sudden Blake's got a new face. Blake's got a new face.
You're not happy just singing it.
I didn't include that in bad songs.
That's true. You didn't.
But it's just there are just those moments. And I mean, fucking like I'll say this much. Give Up the Gun. That is not as good a synth pop song as our buddy Rivers wrote.
What Rivers song are you thinking of?
What is it? Why can't I think of the name? This Is Such a Pity. I think that's a better synth pop song.
Are you still on This Is Such a Pity?
It's a better synth pop song than Give Up the Gun. The reason why is because Ezra is a better songwriter than that song. That song is beneath him.
There's certain songs that there's, and we were just talking about Concision, and I think the one thing in that record, right? Now I have to remind myself, is that Contra or is that Vampires of the Modern City?
That one's Vampires of the Modern City.
That's, if there's like a larger critique I have with those two records, is those two, for whatever reason, there's differences I can tell, but man, some of them get blurred together. Like the approach feels very similar.
I can agree with that. I don't want to give away too much because we still have a few more categories coming up.
But yeah. What I was going to say is this. I think when they do take a song that's like longer, right? Like Give Up the Gun, like that's a pretty long track, right? It's longish for them.
Sure.
I'm like, why this one? Like there are others that are much shorter, but I'm like, you could have.
Yeah, I don't know what the dedication. I think it was the dedication to it's a different genre, because they even say that about the first three albums, is they really tried to go up and go through different genres, for lack of a better term, different musical styles. You know, and I think at that point they just were like, do we have a synth pop song? All right, let's do this one. And then they just kept adding on, like, oh, we can do this little musical shift. We could do this little like transition.
I guess some of it might be like the amount of trust that you put in a band. I think that's something we've mentioned before, where like a good art is where you feel like you're in good hands. And I think maybe like when I listen to a band like Vampire Weekend, because I have such trust in like, okay, where are they going to take me? Like I'm less prone, like for example, the chorus of White Sky. Like I don't hear it and I go, what are they doing? Like I hear intent. And I guess for me, it's like, yeah, it plays to the vibe of the song. Is it my favorite? Although when I was listening to Contra and trying to figure out if it was going to be, where it was going to be in my rankings, first I was like, well, Contra is not the best record. And then I heard Horchata and White Sky one after the other. And I went, dang it. Like, this is a good record.
I will bite my tongue for further categories.
Overall, I've found clarity.
Overall, it is relevancy to the overall the main body of work. To where when I think of those songs, it's not necessarily that they're garbage, but the term is worst song, and that's the song that I can totally skip.
We know our rights, and they have been judged. I did it. I used our.
That's not bad. We are the judges.
We could get power hungry very quick. Get a gavel. Boom.
Oh, I may add that in the sound effects. Don't do it.
All right, let's go to underrated song.
All right.
Do you want me to start? We take it. Yeah, go ahead. You go.
All right. Well, Hannah Hunt would have been an honorable mention within that. Yahey, it was an honorable mention. Oh yeah, I love how that chorus kicks in. That's one where it's so unorthodox, but it works.
The pitched up.
Yeah. That's one. I think most people would probably get annoyed by that, but I did not. I shouldn't say most people, but that would be one that people might get annoyed by.
And I guess that was what I was trying to express to you before, is for me, that chorus of Yahey comes from the same creative space as like the chorus from White Sky, right?
I think you're right.
I'm appreciative of the space it comes from.
However, Yahey, that's more of an instrument because that's more of a sample.
I'm sitting down, everyone, but I stand corrected.
That was another, that was my phone, everybody. I got a text message. I have people who are going to keep texting me. Okay, but I'll skip past How Long was one that I considered, but Kids Don't Stand a Chance. That up until Harmony Hall was my easy favorite song.
That is, I was just singing that song downstairs, and my wife, who doesn't listen to a lot of Vampire Weekend, knows it now because I've been singing it so much.
That song. And it's a song about what they did in their, what was the term for what he said about the three?
The building drum.
Yeah. You kind of mumbled through that. I want you to say that more clearly.
I got very self-conscious that it's a word I've read a lot.
Yeah, your enunciation.
And I've only said so many times. Buildings Roman is how I would pronounce it. And okay, now someone's listening to me like, this guy, what degree does he have?
Yeah, yeah. No, but yeah, that song is definitely, I love the element. And when I first heard the song, it felt so relatable. It's one of those songs that speaks to you as a youth. Mm-hmm. You know, and just... I don't know that how simple the just bonum, 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 bonum. Like it's so simplistic, but it's always spoken to me.
It's great. And what I love about that too is I feel like we could just say underrated Vampire Weekend element is the rhythm section.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the drummers. He's so cool.
Those two are in the pocket.
That's a term that we should throw around even more because it's just a cool vibe. It's not like musically necessarily impressive, but it's just accurate. It's right where it's supposed to be.
Yeah. And I think he has when I think of drummers who I think their job is harder than most.
Oh, sure.
I imagine he has a pretty hard job because I would imagine trying to write drums to the stuff that those guys bring in. It's like, what? Like Cousins. Like, that's the kind of drummer thing where, and like Cousins to me is, I really love Cousins. You like Cousins? Your face right now.
Well, it's it's what category I put it in. I don't dislike the damn song.
When that song came out, I remember I was at your house.
Mm-hmm.
And we had like, I think everyone was kind of like, oh, the new Vampire Weekend track. What is that going to sound like? And I remember I heard Cousins and I was like, let's go. Yes.
Yeah. Well, that is their most rock song. To me, that is like, it's their little bit of teeth.
They got their rock song and it's coming up, baby. Rock song.
All right. All right. Yeah.
Underrated.
Yeah. You're on underrated.
Sympathy from Father of the Bride.
Well, I can't argue that.
That song is so, and it's one of those, like when I first listened to Father of the Bride, when it came out, I don't think I listened to it that much, to be honest. And I liked what I heard. I'd heard all the singles. And I think I heard the first couple of tracks. And it wasn't out of anything except I just, like financially also, I just wasn't buying music anymore. And yeah. I didn't have access otherwise. And so it kind of fell off for me. And then when we were listening more to it again, like that's the song that kind of got buried for me. I'd never really heard it. And man, like they have like, it's all acoustic. They have like double bass breakdown at the end.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Took me a second. I had to refresh my memory. But yeah, that sample is fucking killing.
It's so everything about it to me, and like, I think it's easy to call that their organic record, right? Their stripped down record. It's not, like you mentioned. It's very much so polished. It's lush a lot of times, but it's also I think I was trying to say it before. They thought more about the ways that those three core instruments played off of each other.
Yeah.
And Sympathy is like, that's the Paul Simon song too. That totally sounds.
Oh, he just sounds like Paul Simon to me most of the time.
I feel very like I need to reference this. Like I had that thought in my brain and I remember watching the Sympathy video and there's a commenter on the YouTube that said, this sounds like Paul Simon. And I was like, other people think it.
That's not a revelation. That's just there. But the dynamics of that song, even when it like when it hits that break and the little guitar part, that like boonga da dan, boonga da dan, boonga da dan, boonga da dan, ba da ba da da ba. Again, we're dancing, everybody. That
it is a good track. I had an honorable mention also that I need to say, and it's literally like there's a three song. Sweet, right?
Like
it's
medley.
Sympathy. No, I don't think it's meant to be, but I just think of it that way. It's Sympathy and then Sunflower, right? Oh, Sunflower is so good. And then the song that comes after Sunflower, which I know was based off of a moon.
Flower Moon.
Yeah. And I think those two were with the guy from the Internet, right? Remember Internet? That like R&B band that was a part of Odd Future or Golf Wayne. Like that big, I just remember them because Sid was there. But they're like very like groovy R&B kind of band, like almost kind of like what you call Neptune's right, or in that mode. And like,
well, because Odd Future doesn't that feature we talked about Tyler the Creator.
Tyler Creator, Frank Ocean. So
is Earl Sweatshirt in that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's part of that. I mean, I don't think anyone's part of it anymore. But
the part of the what occurred.
100%. Yeah. Oh my God, I said it again. 50%. 75%.
So I'll take 0% of that.
But it has that vibe. It's Sunflower, the da 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 da.
Yeah.
Oh man, those songs are so good. I love them.
Yeah. I completely agree. Those are great choices.
All right. Overrated. I'll go ahead and take my overweight rated, and it's Oxford Comma. We were just talking about when my new approach to overrated with some of these bands, because it's hard, right? It's like, I mean, they're successful, I guess.
That's the thing, is the term overrated has to be, it has to be a song that is well-liked,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you can like the song, but you have to kind of make some tough decisions when it comes to that.
And for me too, it's the song that if I wanted to get someone into this song or into the band, it would be like the worst song I would want to show them, not because it was bad, but because it would give them the wrong impression.
Yeah.
And that is,
I was about to say that too. Yeah.
Oxford Comma. Like it's, I mean, when I first heard it, I liked it. And I remember like getting, I pulled into everything about it, but lyrically, musically, it's almost like they're making fun of, it's like someone else making fun of Vampire Weekend.
Yeah.
Like the Little John, everything about it.
Damn, that, you know what? It's a really good choice because I considered that one. And just you saying Little John, not that I dislike Little John. I mean, shots. I can understand it. Turn down for what? How do you not dance? Let's dance really quick. Turn down for what?
Rob is making me very apologetic about his Little John. I didn't know you know so much. I mean, I guess everyone knows.
I mean, yes.
Who doesn't know Little John?
He's a hit maker, man. He's like the best hype man or the most praised hype man I can think of.
DJ Khaled. Next question.
All right, fine. Why can't I think of his name? He wore the big clock. Khaled. Why can't I think of, he wore the big clock. You know who I'm thinking of, too.
I know who you're thinking of, but in my head, like when you can't remember some kind of chemical trigger in my brain, I'm making it your fault, by the way, that I can't remember something. That's what I'm doing. So that everyone can hear it. Public Enemy.
Public Enemy. I can remember Public Enemy. I can't remember.
Flavor Flav.
There you go.
Flavor Flav.
Yeah, that's that.
Flavor.
Eat your heart out, Little John. Okay.
What are we talking about? We're talking about Oxford Comma.
Yes. Which is...
It's overrated.
It's overrated. And mine is, and now you can understand the facial expression I had before, Cousins.
Man, I love Cousins.
It's because of how big it was. It felt like it pulled in a new audience. And I just went like, you play Cousins? No. Don't get me wrong. I appreciate the fact that it's them on their instruments. There is no flashiness. There is no smoke and mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
That is them just playing. But it's kind of frantic.
It's, I don't know. I guess to me, those songs are in like one mode of Vampire Weekend that mm-hmm. I get sucked into, which is like,
well, Oxford Comma.
Frantic, right? Very, and I agree with that, right? Very frantic, very quick, mm-hmm. going a lot of different places. But I feel like they also know how long those need to be.
Yeah,
I think within the album, I don't know.
I wouldn't say that Cousins shouldn't be on the album or it shouldn't exist, but just when it comes to their more known songs, that's probably my, it's hard. Oxford Comma was a great suggestion because that was one I was considering as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I would kind of put it in that, like, that's overrated to me. It's not.
I was
not
close to putting it as my favorite. That's weird.
That's funny. I know you love that song, but I think yours is more nostalgia than it is that song's a great song.
Well, Hannah Hunt went out because that was, I guess, objective. I was like, come on, I have to think of that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is interesting. I think we're basically two albums at this point.
This episode is brought to you by Grapes.
If this is Rob editing, hello, Rob editing this, hey, this part.
And we're back.
Welcome back. That was a word from our sponsors. Yeah.
For Grapes.
We need to get sponsors. We're at best album, and I'm not sure.
Are we going to start with best? We're starting with best.
So we have, but we could go with worst. Let's end on a good note. So let's start with worst.
All right, sounds good. Album. Worst album. I feel like I'm going to hate you if you don't agree with me on this. It's Contra.
I don't think we're going to have a good conversation.
Oh my God. Contra's the worst album out of them.
Bottom two for me.
Bottom two. Okay. We don't need to, because I think that there was plenty of words spoken towards Contra. Contra has the most amount of songs that I can care less to listen to.
But it also has songs that when I think of like Vampire Weekend, like a top 10 that I want to put together, like it has songs I would have to put on there.
Such as?
One second. Well, yeah. Contra for one. Horchata. Well,
yeah. I think Horchata is not that good a song. I think it's... And, you know, I mean, we hate each other now. We're no longer friends.
I'm not Horchata, even, I can't even
Horchata,
look at
Horchata, White Sky, I like Holiday. Taxi Cab's a good song. Run's a really good song. Cousins is my most overrated. Giving Up the Gun. Well, okay, so I got it wrong. Giving Up the Gun is on there as well, so that's a bad song to me.
Diplomat's Son is very good.
I think your Contra is beautiful. That's what I think of anytime I think of the album.
I think for me, it's very like... Yes, like that's why it's in my bottom two, is because I feel like there are slightly less hits and more, maybe more misses. But it was hard for me because when I was thinking about what another Vampire Weekend record would sound like, this isn't what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's hard to dislike Contra because of that, because it represents what I really like about them as a band, which is I feel like if I were to listen to their records back to back, there are definitely things that carry over. Some elements get muddled, but I really do hear a band that feels like they're trying to get better at writing songs because they want to write better songs become popular.
I agree with that sentiment, but it does feel like this was the album to where we've talked about it before. The first album, they titled it just Vampire Weekend because, you know, these are the songs that we're going in with. We've been working on these. Whereas Contra does sound to me like a band that has to make an album due to label prerequisites. You know, like you have to make this. You got so much time to make it. And that's what came out. And it's just compared to the other three, it doesn't strike me as well.
I could see
it's not a bad album. Again, everyone.
I think we can pretty safely say we're playing with some amount of cushion here. But yes. I respect it because, like I said, it's in my bottom two.
Which terrifies me. I am really afraid of what your worst album is.
Number one, self-titled, first record. And here's why. Wait.
I can't speak, so it's easy to wait.
If I could describe to everybody the face Rob has given me.
Ooh, okay.
Is this the most upset you've been at me?
I'm surprised. I'm not upset.
And here's the thing. This record... I love this record and I listen to it and I have fond feelings with this record. And this very question we're having, I've went through so many different iterations of it and how I could justify it. This is how I could justify it being my least favorite. And maybe it's the one that I think is the, how else do I put this? Worst feels so crude. But to me, amateur? Just listening to that record, it's a hint of what I will grow to really like about them, but it's not the reason I like them. I really like that record. But when I think about like,
I like how you said that.
It's there's too much about it that's wrapped up in that image we were just talking about, that Ivy League image, that I think other records, including my favorite one, what I think is the best one, have, if not completely shed, they've like, they're not so focused on that part. Like, it's not a part of their identity as much. And I think that first record, because it's so wrapped up in that,
yeah,
there's hints, right? Promises. Yeah. But that's why to me it's got potential.
God, man. And yeah, whew.
I love that record.
Your argument is sound. Your argument is sound. But I would apply almost what you were saying more towards Contra, to where I felt Contra was them embracing this image, where the first one, like I said, it felt more like they just were coming in. And it was like, let's see what happens.
Mm.
Whereas Contra feels like they more were forced to show what you saw on their first album. I'm just so surprised.
It's funny because I feel like we have totally different readings of that. I see the second one as like a playoff of that, like initial mythology, but like going into other roots that I thought were kind of like Diplomat's Son's a great example. Like that's like got reggae, like reggaeton kind of vibes to it. And I don't know, like there wasn't.
But see, that's where I see the far reaching. It's like we have to be this. Whereas the first album is more like Blake's got a new face. You know?
Blake got a new face. He got one. He had an old one, and now he's got a new one.
I think you're right. It's perception. It's really just what lens you're looking through.
It's hard, but I do think it sounds like. Would you say self-titled is bottom two for you, or no? Is it up at the top?
It would slightly be bottom two.
I think that's what I'm saying, because I had Contra and that was bottom two, and then I was considering where they fit. And of course, guys, these are all locked in stone on my deathbed.
I won't change my mind tomorrow.
Tomorrow might have been different, but
this is exciting. Then we know what the top two are for both of us.
This is shades of Weezer, maybe. I'll go first. my favorite is Father of the Bride.
I'm with you. It's Father of the Bride. Two episodes in a row. We are not good at arguing with each other. Well, we did a good job, I guess. Early.
I guess. Yeah, I feel like we had some good heavily. I think of you a little less. I think you think the less the same of me.
You're right. Where you work.
Record good. It shouldn't be good though. Are you like me when you see that a record has like more than 15 tracks? I immediately think, and it's not a hip hop album, right? If it's like not a hip hop record, and it's got over
where there's no
tracks,
skits in between.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think this is not going to be good. They should have cut something. What do you cut from that record?
Yeah, I'm going to go through the playlist right now because, I mean, it opens up with, isn't it called Father of the Bride, the first track?
First track is called, it references Father of the Bride. I don't know if it's called.
Which is so weird. Who do you think, when I first was about to listen to it, I was like, Father of the Bride, I'm like, Steve Martin?
I was thinking, I even did a little digging, and I don't think we got a straight answer from anyone in the band, of course. Why would they?
Why don't they just write a thesis about their own damn album, you elitist assholes?
Yeah, weenies.
Hold You Now is the first song.
With Daniel Heim. God, do you like Heim? Familiar. Have you heard them?
I'm not familiar. No.
They're actually someone I was going to recommend that we do at some point. Heim, it's her and her two sisters are from L.A.
Okay.
Man, they are freaking. And she, I love her. That's another reason why I love this record is she's so good on like, the fact that she's like this reoccurring like voice.
Yeah, because she also sings on.
We Belong Together.
Yeah, We Belong
Married
Together.
In a Gold Rush.
Yeah.
And that first song is, it's.
I'm like still surprised, though. We've agreed on two straight episodes on the best album.
Well, here's why I went back and forth. Vampires in the Modern City.
Really
there's,
good album.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Really good. I think this record, though, when I hear it, this Father of the Bride, it's so much more exciting. And when I heard Vampires in the Modern City, I remember it. Like, it's important to me from the period of my life that I was in and like how it spoke to where I was.
Mm-hmm.
But this record it's playful. It's light, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not 18 tracks go by and you want to listen to it again. It's not a slog. It doesn't feel pretentious being 18.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like a chore to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it is the longest album. It's over an hour. That's the longest one. But just every song that I'm looking at. I mean, How Long is such a cool. Big Blue is the worst song on the album to me. Mm. And the only reason it's the worst song is because it's just that same thing over and over again. It's that same lyrical concept over and over again. But that's kind of cool. It's almost.
It's a minute and 48 seconds. So it's.
Yeah. But How Long into Unbearably White. Rich Man.
Rich Man's good. But my track has got to be Sympathy, Sunflower, Flower Moon. Those three together are good. But I mean, This Life, Like, yeah, really,
this
that
life
whole
is cool.
Opening.
And this life is, that's Vampire Weekend.
Yeah.
I know that Batman wasn't on this one, but it's still, I'm just like, it that totally it's, for lack of a better term, that's Vampire Weekend. That is, it sounds like This Life is such a Vampire Weekend song. They could have written that on the first album. It could have been on any of the albums.
Yeah. The energy, the vibes are very like, there is a lot of continuity, right? That's part of what makes this record for me so exciting is, I was saying it before, I love hearing what they do and like whatever Ezra Koenig is thinking through, right? When he's, I think at this point he is the primary songwriter with Rostam gone. Yeah. Like, I hear that there's elements of their DNA that are still around. Like, there's still very much like tracks from, right, the self-titled that I see those versions in. Yeah. But it always feels like they're trying something new or multiple new things, and they're being done for the good of the purpose of the song, right? Yeah. There's like that amount of intent.
Oh yeah. And really, just to kind of give some closure, because damn, dude, we've gone a while here. But Modern Vampires of the City, the only reason it couldn't fit on is when I listen to Father of the Bride, there's not a bad song to me. Mm-hmm. Or not a lackluster song. Whereas, as I said before, Diane Young, Fingerback, Worship You, those aren't really great songs. When it comes to that album, it just doesn't feel like it accompanies.
Slight dips. Yeah.
Hudson is cool as fuck. I love the darkness behind that, or the dark minor tones behind it. You know, Tori, it's still an honorable mention, but yeah, I think it's got to be Father of the Bride.
Yeah, it's a very, very, and just like, I want to listen to it now. Like, now and then, like when we've been recording these, I'm like, okay, I'm ready for my break. But I need to like buy that record to listen to it. Like,
I was very proud of you that you didn't say that you listened to Manchester Orchestra this last week. I was very proud of you.
I definitely did a break. You know, this podcast is playing havoc on my YouTube algorithms, because they still want me to like listen to Weezer, the Black Album. I'm like, I don't want to listen to that.
I said it about Spotify. This is really going to fuck up me hearing new music.
So are we ready for a rating of 1 out of 10?
I feel we're going to be on different pages. Here we go. All right. So I'll just start. I'm not going to give my rating, but I will give what our ratings have been.
Oh, you remember. Okay.
Yeah. So Weezer, you gave a 5. I gave a 6.
Okay.
Manchester Orchestra, I gave a 7.5. You gave a 6.
Okay.
Here we go. I don't know who should go first. Rock, paper, scissors?
I feel... Okay. I'll go first. Just because...
I like the visual bits. I like the visual bits that nobody can see.
That'd be good. They're 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10.
8 out of 10.
All right. I figured you were going to have a high rating for him.
It's the, so far from what we've covered, best songwriters. Like, if I'm gonna go for the pantheon, if we're gonna keep track of like of the artists that we've covered, best songs, like period, like records, I'm not getting into records, but like best songs, Say It Ain't So is still the thing that still tops everything. But
I
see there's like consistency, and there aren't, I mean, there's just none of those. Like, the worst albums that we've listened to up till this point have been, like, difficult for me to listen to. And
like, see, for me, it's strictly Weezer. That and Hope. I mean,
that's the thing.
I don't put Hope and Cope in the same
They're the category. Same Hope to me.
Yeah, there you go. So. Well.
Talk it to me.
Let me go ahead and we'll see about our next episode, everybody. Hopefully we got another one. 7.
We're done.
7 out of 10.
No, I think that's fair. I think that's,
well, that I gave, who, what did I rate Manchester Orchestra?
7.5.
I prefer, I can listen to Vampire Weekend any day of the week. I can listen to Manchester Orchestra any day of the week. But if I had to choose, I mean, it's already been showcased to me. I have seen that I will go to Manchester Orchestra more than I go to Vampire Weekend. I mean, just in my own free listening.
It's hard, right? Like, I guess in my head too, when I'm thinking of how we do these ratings, there's element, I'm sure, where I'm comparing them with previous bands, but I also feel like it's based on my expectations that they give me, like the bands themselves.
You know, that's a perfect segue into closing out this, because who are we covering next episode?
It's an imperfect triangle.
There you go. Yeah.
You guys like these are my new bits.
He's a clever, clever fella.
Oh, it's a perfect circle. I'm so excited.
And you know, Maynard has a place in my heart in which love and hate exist.
That's true. And I think let's not even dive into a perfect circle yet, but I think we're going to have.
That's coming up, everybody.
Peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
There are going to be a few of those.
I think we're getting ready for these are when we talk about these bands, everybody. It's personal.
It's personal.
It is personal.
It's because we've read up. We know our rights. And when you know your rights, you know when you're right. That's the new catchphrase. Type it down.
Yeah. Have a good week, everybody. We're going to see you 2 weeks from now. Listen to some of Perfect Circle.
Right, Colton, here, right now.
Colton, I love
it's
you, dude.
Right,
you don't know when to stop writing. All right.
That was good. Bye, everybody. Please take care of yourselves.
Yes.
Go to our Instagram.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we got an Instagram. You got to let us know whether or not we should use it. And know.your.rights. Colton, how's that spelled?
WRITES.
podcast@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
Bye, everybody.